Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, welcome to the Red Men Originals podcast. I'm Paul Machin, Chris Page at Dan Club. Steve Hoare, join me for this one to discuss our sweet relief following Liverpool winning the Merseyside Derby. We're going to look ahead to Newcastle. I'd be interested to know how the agony rant section goes this week. I've moved it to the middle because I don't feel like we need to get it out the way quite so much as we have done in recent weeks. That might be a little thin on the ground this week. And I'm not sure how we're going to transition tonally towards this, but we want to talk a little bit about the inquests into the UEFA handling of the Paris Champions League final as well within this as well. So yeah, plenty to get stuck into. If you're live with us here on YouTube, then you can interact with us in the comments section. If you're a club legend, you can use the Discord chat. Other than that, just hunker down, get yourself prepared, have a big smile, because Liverpool are winning football matches. Well, match again.
Don't get carried away.
Run before you can walk.
Carried away. I'm in a fucking shit. Don't be happy because I'm in a shit.
No, I'm carried away. It's fine.
Good.
Yeah, it's great. I love it.
Yeah. Question, kickoff question comes from one of our club legends, Son of Barnes. Says, do we, deep down in our hearts, do we really want Everton relegated? We've touched this on this a number of times, particularly over the last 12 months, Chris. I've changed my opinion. I was like very much in the camp of I don't mind Everton so much that I enjoy them being around, but I'm kind of in the position now where I think it'd just be really funny if they got relegated.
It would be, and listen, I'm still the same opinion, really. I want them to live in this mid-table purgatory forever and have no joy whatsoever, and I can't get over that fact. Mm. Like, an Everton fan said to me this week, they truly believe that they were one of the most irrelevant sides in the league. They don't win against the big sides. They don't go down. They don't have days out. They don't do anything. They just fucking exist.
They haven't won a trophy since
1995. We were talking about it, Wendy. Obviously, they beat us at Anfield in the COVID year, so they didn't get that joy. Like, the last time they beat us, we were talking yesterday, it was in the FA Cup. They didn't even see the goal that beat us because fucking ITV didn't show it. So, like, all the good things that happened to them in the last 10 years, that's all two of them. They actually didn't see with their own two eyes, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, it would still be hilarious to see Everton go down. I would laugh my head off. I will take loads of enjoyment out of it, but it's not something that I want. Also, it's an easy 4-point season.
Yep.
And you can't say that about teams that will come up.
Yeah. The only saving grace they've got, really, is that game that they won at Anfield during COVID with no fans. At least it wasn't Gilfie that scored it. You know what I mean? Or at least he wasn't all over them celebration pictures. Because that was honestly one of the first things I did, because Toffee TV have got that posted up in the studio.
He did score?
You know what I mean? Sorry, I mean in that celebration. They've got the celebration picture where they're in
Did he score the penalty?
Ooh. I'm sorry, I'm talking about the celebration photos where it's got the cop behind
Richarlison.
And Richarlison celebrating. I'm like, if that was like, if he was him front and centre on that,
stood above
like,
them.
Just fucking set fire to it, because that's them. That's them done. How do you feel about them?
It would be hilarious for it to go down. On Chris's point, I think what I would miss is finding weird and wonderful ways to beat them. Like, even last night, to a certain extent, like they hit the post seconds later with one that we just find.
And the goal, he's gone for it.
And the goal, yeah. So I'd miss all that. I'd really miss the Pickford antics and what have you. So I think, yeah, really, I'd like them to stay in the Premier League, but I'd like them to stay in that mediocrity, like Chris refers to, just that mid-table nothingness that they seem to exist in forever, because they've actually become more relevant in everyone's lives in the sort of the past 12 months when they've been threatened with relegation. Mm-hmm. It was almost better when they were just doing nothing and not really hurting anyone or making anybody happy, including Everton fans themselves. So, yeah, I think maybe for a year or two. But it would be interesting to see what happened to them were they to go down. Like, if they were to sort of come back straight away, they'd have joy in that. I don't want that.
They'd enjoy it.
They'd revel in it. Games.
If they go down, they go down again, I think. Those
that's
players,
the other option, yeah. They,
they'd come so back badly up, come ran second. That they're just going to continue to tumble.
That's exactly what
they'd come back up second. They wouldn't win the playoffs and they wouldn't win the league. They'd just come second.
The worst way,
I've got a lot of Everton fans, friends, family members, people who I know. Some people obviously work in the building with us, the Toffee lads, and I can say I want them all relegated. They can go, and they can go tomorrow, and bye, see you later. I can't wait.
Yeah. They're just hanging on to that record. That's all they're there for, isn't it? About how long they've been in the top.
I need them to
that's
go. All
that's their thing, there. Isn't it? Yeah.
And I don't think they will come straight back up, because I think too many players would leave. They had one of the worst. I know Carragher got sticker in the worst run club in the country. They're not, because there's some clubs who are literally about to go bust and stuff, but they're one of the worst run clubs in the Premier League. No one knows actually who's running the place. They can't get anything right. So who's going to have the brains to get them back out of the Championship? So no, I want them relegated. I think it'd be really funny. I want Connor Cody relegated. I want Jordan Pickford relegated. They can all go and I would have a good old laugh about it. I can't wait.
They're the worst run club because of how much money they've had. You know, like when you, and it's what's quite funny because they hate Newcastle. We used to do social club, and like Baz and Ped used to just whinge about Newcastle constantly because they've got this thing about how it's like they go on about the entitlement of like Newcastle thinking they're a big club when you know, like Everton are a big club. And the fact that Newcastle have just been handed, you know, a blank check to go and spend on stuff, and they're immediately challenging for top
four. It's so bad. Everton have been whinging, all the rules are against us and all this. It's like, well, Newcastle did it with their money. They just signed a good player. Yeah. You've got a good manager in. That's all you needed to do. You can spend your money wisely like Newcastle have.
Yeah.
But Everton, no.
No.
Terrible.
None of that. None of that. It's just cheating, isn't it? You know what I mean? Yeah, it'd be very un-Everton to spend the money wisely. So it'd be cop-eyed behaviour, presumably.
I like that they needed a striker and then he went and signed the striker and then their main striker gets injured and they don't trust that striker to play.
Call back a kid from Sunderland.
Call back a lad off loan. Like Neil Mopay, honestly, just it's so funny. Like every decision they make is really, really funny. To a point where Conor Cody and Tarkowski, they're good signings, and then even they get exposed, and it's just they are hilarious. The only bad thing about it, and like kind of what you guys agreed, was that once they're in the Championship and they're not really in your conscious anymore, then they're less likely to laugh at them. But the flip side is we'd see the Toffee lads every day, so we would still, I think, if they, it wouldn't so much be out of sight, out of mind, because we still would be seeing them. And I think it'd be really great that I'd be speaking to all the guys and they go, well, oh yeah, we're playing our 48th game of the season, we're going away to Preston on a Tuesday. Yeah, I can't wait.
I'm looking forward to them trying to work out how many games there are left in a Championship season, because I every time I go, I've done it on Footy Manager playing in a low division, it's like I've done the maths on it being a 38 game season for like my entire, you know, since the early days of the Premier League, and I go, how many teams are in this?
More of these? Are you messing? More of these?
I think the someone's just sort of shot past the there very quietly, very quickly.
Quietly. There's a slam of the door.
Don't mind. My general notion comes from I believe in the good of the city, and I think that I always said this. I don't want. Why should people in London have happiness? Why should we should have happiness when people in Liverpool aren't having it? So there is obviously a little bit of that.
Eight more games to go to, though.
Yeah, exactly. But that's what I mean, is that them going down the Championship.
Go down and then put the season ticket prices up. Because there's just more games.
But I don't, them going down the Championship and having a good time would do their souls a little bit.
They won't have a good time. It's Everton. It doesn't happen. And I really want them to open that. I've said this before. I want them to open that stadium on the first game of a season. And it's like
Coventry.
It's like big grand opening of the new stadium. We welcome our visitors, Luton Town.
The ultimate irony of it being Coventry and them going, oh, nice new stadium. Works out really well.
See, no problem here whatsoever.
Sunderland are like, oh, yeah, well, yeah. Good for you. Yeah.
Ground sharing with Bootle soon.
Yeah, do you put a Tesco's on the side? That's a good idea. There was a tweet I saw from an Evertonian saying league victories by Liverpool, versus Liverpool by decade, which I thought was fascinating reading. In the 60s, they won, this Everton won 5 times in 8 years. In the 70s, they beat us three times. In the 80s, four. In the 90s, six. Joe in the 2000s, that. Two. Yeah. In the 10s, one. And so far in the 2020s, once. Which I only serve to highlight how horrible it was being a Liverpool fan in the city during the 90s.
Man, Drake and Chelsea, because I'm still not over
yeah.
that.
Oh my God. Yeah, absolutely fucking horrendous.
Here's us moaning, by the way.
Yeah.
Can I talk to Goal Crash? You have a question very quickly. Where does it rank in funniest derby goals?
It's nowhere
near. It's never going to be Origi's. That's number one. It could be number two in funniest derby winners or derby goals. They hit the post and 13 seconds later we scored and their goalie was running away from the goal. It is up there with funny derby goals. Like
I don't know because I don't think I appreciated it from that perspective. And maybe in the fullness of time I'll get to look back on it in the pantheon of great derby and hilarious goals. But I don't know that it ranks better than us putting a heavily rotated side yeah. out and beating them at Anfield
yeah.
and then playing them in the FA Cup with a bunch of children and Curtis Jones scoring that. I think that was, in terms of like the most ev things that could happen,
yeah.
like Mane scoring last minute.
Off the post, yeah. Wasn't the smoke on the blue smoke or yeah. something on the pitch?
That was the Origi. That was the Origi one, where they threw a flare on it, 0-0.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's always going to be, that can't be beaten. There's no, I can't figure out a world where it is. I don't know, you know, it's up there with the Curtis Jones was almost funny just because it was literally a team of children, but there is something so evident about not attacking all game when your plan is to get a set piece. Right, lads, let's get everyone up front and then immediately afterwards you'll let a goal in because your yeah. goalkeeper decides that he just forgets that he's a goalkeeper.
Thought it was half-time or something.
Yeah, he's got off. I do. It is up there with
funny dad moments. We did a big bit on this on the Final Word show. He's just hilariously shit as a goalie.
He's not that bad. No, unless it's against us.
He is actually in the broad spectrum of things a really good goalie, but he's such a knobhead that he can't understand that he is his biggest problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like if he just was a goalie instead of trying to like banter people or try to get involved with the crowd and all that kind of stuff, if he just shut up and got on with his game. I compared him to Dejan Lovren. Like when you just say go and do your job, he's really good at his job. But if he ever thinks he has to be something more above and beyond, you know, he's a step away from absolute catastrophe. It
was like last year when he was lying on the floor wasting yeah. time, smiling and winking, and then Alisson got to do it back.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. do it afterwards, mate. Yeah. Do it when you've got something, like not before.
He set himself up for a fall there, and he did it against Newcastle as well, for Everton. Remember, he was walking off at half-time at St. James. He's obviously getting loads of abuse because of the ex-Sunderland connection. So if walking off, giving it the big, giving it 2-0, and they got beat 3-2. So he sets himself up for fall time and time again. You're right, you need to wait till the end of the game to do it. He doesn't learn, quite clearly, but it's those occasions that seem to get the better of him. When he is getting a little bit of stick, he'll be getting it from the Anfield crowd, he'll get it from St. James's. It's those moments whereby it comes back to bite him. He can't keep in check of his emotions, quite frankly, which is really important for a goalkeeper. He's never been able to do that, though.
So, expends so much energy trying to tell everyone that he's not bothered by what stuff is going on around him. I said he's like the singing the song about him having little arms and he's like putting his arms up in the air and clapping and all that, and it's like you're not that big a character, and you know it doesn't transcend enough. Yeah, no, exactly. Mm. Like Neville Southall could have a relationship with the cop because he was, if not the best goalie, he was one of the best goalies ever to play in the league. You're Jordan Pickford. You're a fucking joke. Mm. Just be a goalie for a bit, mate, and shut up. And he gets what he deserves. And long make that's one of the things I will miss.
Yeah.
He'll come back, though. It won't be for Everton, but he'll be back in the Premier League. Someone will sign him, you would think.
If he could go and replace one of the other goalies who's crap against us, like Hugo Lloris, that'd be absolutely spectacular.
Someone will sign him. And his issue is, like, he celebrates weird things really over the top. Like he loves, he plays for Everton though, Steve.
He's got to celebrate something.
Got a lot of pent-up celebrations.
He loves shouting at people when they make him do his job. You know, he's like, oh, you have to make a save. Well, I'm going to scream at you. It was like, well, that's kind of your job, mate.
It's like he's watched goalkeepers do that and hasn't quite applied it in the right place.
It's like those people who go on X Factor who've never sang in front of anyone but themselves and presume they must be really good. You know what I mean? So he's like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, because if you've not seen what real success looks like,
yeah,
he must be like, yeah, caught across it, yeah. Get in.
What was that one he did last night where he, like, dived and, like, just went dead high? And did you see that one in the first half?
Yeah.
There was just no need for it. Why did he do that?
It was
that?
A loose cross into the box, and he full length sort of dive pushed it away and got a woo.
He's useless.
A couple of sandwiches short, I think, in the overall. He went to see a psychiatrist or a psychologist previously. Yeah, he did go and get a little bit of help to try and calm him down, because he's no doubt about it, he is a little bit loose.
He's wired differently, isn't he?
Yeah, a little bit.
But also, he's not that good a goalie. He's okay. I still think it's overplayed. People tell me he's really good, and I think he's fine. I think he makes the saves that you'd probably expect him to make.
I
think he's a good goalie. He just can't play for against Liverpool.
Thinking is his problem. Having to think is probably his issue. Sort of instinctively, he's quite a good shot stopper. Like a lot of sort of lower down the table goalkeepers are, because they have to do loads, you know what I mean? So you do pull off good saves. I think he can do all that. It's when he has to make a decision, like the Origi goal with Luke, and he's looking at it going, I don't know how to deal with that. Yeah. And like last night, there's something coming, he doesn't quite know what to do with himself. It's when he has to think he has issues.
It's an Anfield thing, isn't it? A lot of times, because he's had actually quite good games against us at Goodison. He saved him a couple of times.
Earlier
this season, when he was probably the best player. So he has had that, but there's something about Anfield. And like I was saying, when we lost the toss, I was on the watch along with Elton. I said, that might not be the worst thing, you know. Mm. Like going cop end first half and just having Jordan Pickford in front of the cop for a half. I'm all right with that. And then lo and behold, I've never seen a goalkeeper in my life make a worse decision of who's going to strike this ball. Like, he goes to close down Cody Gakpo and then just doesn't realise, Mo Salah's just got to empty. Like, the counter-attack was awesome by us to speak about it, but like, that isn't easy. If Pickford is in the middle of his goal, that isn't an easy finish for Mo Salah. Because he just towed into an empty net. And I love he just carries on walking and turns around the circle, just gives it a clap. Oh, well, never mind, lads.
When you see it and it's a still image, it's like he's about to jump and turn and go, type or something like that, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? He's just completely like...
He's looking the other way.
Why is he looking the other way?
I said to someone this morning, a blue, I was in the gym this morning with a blue, and I said to him, like, if he stays in the middle of his goal, listen, we might still score, Salah might bring it down, Gakpo might bring it down, whatever, but he has to make us do something. He can't do that and let Salah just get any connection score. He has to make it harder than
you
that.
You can't. You're a goalie.
Yeah. I've never played a goal, but that doesn't look right to me.
No. Yeah. Your idea is to get yourself in the best possible position to save a shot kicked at the goal.
Ah, right, yeah. He wasn't doing that.
No.
He wasn't doing that.
Quite the opposite. He had Cody Gakpo's number. He was all over him.
It was a strong press, wasn't it? Like, on Cody Gakpo. If that comes off, he's read the game beautifully, but as it turns out, there was a whole other player.
The flip side is
our best goal scorer.
If it goes to Gakpo, he probably could have just passed it back to Mo Salah into an open goal. I love it. Yeah. I love them. But yeah, to relegate them. And I love it. I love playing them like that, but like still, even one season, I've just get rid of them. And like I say, they will come back up probably. If they did, they'll come second. They won't win nothing. And it'll be like they'll get promotion with four games to go. But someone like Burnley this year have already pissed the league, and they don't even get the joy of a playoff win.
It would be funny if, because we mentioned this the other week, if the Championship had evolved such that his brand of football is not good enough to get you out of the Championship anymore, and they just become one of those doldrum QPR style, never really good enough to get to the playoffs, too good to get relegated, just... And imagine just becoming what they are,
Preston.
But a division lower.
I was just thinking Tranmere for about 10 years, because that's all they did. They get the playoffs every year, never quite make it, and then eventually just like there's only so much we can give before we tumble down the league.
Preston's a fucking boss example, because they did all that stuff when they were on the telly the other week, and they were talking about Preston's history and all the titles they've won and blah, blah, blah. It's like it's been 40 years or whatever since they were in the top division, but you all know Preston... Historically, a big footy team, but no one ever mentioned Preston. Like in my head, they exist somewhere between League Two and mid table in the Championship at any given point during their existence. But couldn't tell you how they do. No one, you never see. Think about the results. You would never look out for them in any way, shape, or form. That could be them.
With global warming, their stadium could be in the sea by the time you get back up.
That ground, man, fucking hell. Like, you know, it's just... Because if you're going to get out the Championship, having a really compact, like, heavy to go to
gnarly
ground,
yeah,
could really have been a benefit to them, but instead it's probably going to get turned into
When is it supposed to open up? Is it next year?
I honestly don't know.
It's only near ready yet, so it must be it's a couple of years away at least, isn't it? Mm. But yeah, by then they might be in League Two.
Big love, by the way, to CZ Red in our Club Legend Discord chat, who bumped into me and Chris last night after the game just to reaffirm that it's not CZ Red.
It's
CZ Red, but it's also CZ Red. C60 said I'll be fucking made up if Evan get relegated. The fuckers have teased me long enough. the game then. I favourite moments?
Other than that, I love Stefan Bajceta.
Yeah.
My worry going into this, I don't know if you guys said that, I don't want to put yourself too much, was like, their midfield looked like very combative, very athletic. It did well against Arsenal, it nullified Arsenal. And our midfield, quite frankly, hasn't won a midfield battle since Man City, maybe. And even that was touching all the times. So I was moving Stefan Bajcetic forward, putting Fabinho back in. I was apprehensive. He was unbelievable. He's got this ability to just like sniff danger, but then do something about it. Yeah. He actually goes and wins. And if he wins the ball, he's so good in the challenge and coming out the other way. But what I enjoyed about his performance yesterday was that because he was number 8, he was allowed to be a bit more expressive on the ball and show us what he's got there as well. So for me, he was the standout. And I remember a couple of weeks ago, we were saying, like, you know, this season might be a write-off, but what can you take from it? Is there something you can go build on for next, towards whatever it becomes? And he might be that. Thank God they got that new contract signed when they did, because there'd be a lot of people sniffing around him. They might have saved Liverpool a few quid. He might be thinking I should have waited a few extra ones before I'd put pen to paper on it. But I thought, like, he was the best player on the pitch in the Merseyside derby in a game where we've all been really, really worried about that position. Everton clearly thought, how do we win this game? Is that we'll win the midfield battle and we'll try and hoof it long to this crowd up front. Couldn't do it because him, Fabinho and Henderson were all brilliant.
Salah said he's been our best player since he came in.
Yeah, he was right. He was best player last night as well for me. He was superb. And I take Steve's point on sort of the little bit of trepidation about him going into that match, because you thought, like, Everton did do really well in that midfield. It was Land of the Giants a little bit in there last night as well. And as brilliant as he has been, he isn't physically ready yet. So look, he's still growing, for, you know what I mean? He's still slight. Yeah, he's not even a man yet, really. So there were slight concerns for me about how he'd cope. But listen, I was wrong. I was badly wrong, because he was just wonderful. And the biggest credit I can almost give him is Fabinho and Henderson were good, given how much they struggled. They were much better last night. He still overshadowed them too. He was levels above them. And I don't quite know what type of midfielder he's going to be yet. We signed him as a centre-back. He's been brilliant in the six, and then he goes into the 8 and does that. Like, he's got everything. He showed his range of passing last night. He showed his awareness. He showed his composure when he did get opportunities to go forward. He's lucky not to get an assist with a Salah one that gets deflected over. I can't speak highly enough of what this kid has done coming into the team, and especially last night. He was wonderful, and I loved his interview afterwards. I haven't seen him speak really at any point. He spoke last night, boss accent, love all that Serbian Spanish scouse mix, that's class. But he spoke really well as well, and I kept asking about his tackling, his love for tackling. He just really refreshing to watch him play and to hear him, because like Steve says, it has been a bad season. We've been in the doldrums a little bit, so to have Bajcetic to hang on to in these last few weeks and what's to come is really nice, actually.
As Davey, like, started a Liverpool career goal, I was trying to think of young lads who've done it better, and I can't, it's not on sprung to mind. Maybe Raheem Sterling, but even he was a little bit in and out. Jordan Ibe was okay, but like, you're going back a long way to think of a teenager who comes in. And like, Trent was good, but Trent was I don't know, there was still quite...
Owen and Fowler, I think, are the benchmarks.
Yeah. Gerrard as well.
Gerrard, but he was a bit in and out as well initially, wasn't he?
It's as good as anything. To put him in the mix with those type of players, all of them. You know, we're talking about world-class football.
High praise, most of them. Yeah.
And he hasn't put a foot wrong. He's been excellent. And he has been our best player. He really has. Like, if you look at now, since the World Cup, maybe the turn of the year, he's in Liverpool's best 11. If there was a Champions League final tomorrow, he'd be in the team. And that's just what he's done for himself. He's been magnificent. And listen, we've had false dawns with young players before. You don't want to go, you know, you don't want to be saying he's going to be this, he's going to be that. But I think it's fair to say he could be anything. Mm. There was a lot of comments on the watch long yesterday saying, you know, he could save Liverpool a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, if they wanted Jude Bellingham and Matheus Nunes or whatever they wanted, and there was a budget of 300 million or 200, whatever it was, if you can get two better players now, because you don't need to go and sign three, that really does, that's where it could help you out. If it is Bellingham, maybe you do go and get someone else. There's money elsewhere, because you don't need to worry about him. He's in the squad now, and he deserves to be. He is excellent.
Yeah, well, I think it's an interesting point. We've done this, it's very basic math, Chris, but we've had these conversations in the past where you talk about, like, if you're going to go and spend £75 million on a player or £80 million, that's sound, but it's actually, you look at your areas of the team and how else you've constructed it. And we say, like, Virgil van Dijk, yeah, it costs £75 million, but then if he's partnered with Matip, if he's gone on a free, then effectively you've spent £37 million on each centre-half, which is where it kind of tends to average out. And that's what Pochettino has got the potential ability to do, is that Jude Bellingham could actually end up moving for a world record transfer fee for a midfielder. He'll go for a British transfer record if he goes above Enzo Fernandez. But if he's in a team with Stephen Pochettino, you paid £500,000 for, then that's what a rounded transfer business looks like.
It is. And I think the beauty of Pochettino in this regard is that you're not, like, let's say if he was a Fabinho, I think you'd say, well, he's a six on his own. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not tying yourself down to a formation either with Pochettino, because he can play as part of a two, I think, because he can play in an eight. Mm-hmm. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if he can play as part of a two. He can play that six or he can play an eight. So you've not pigeonholed yourself into a system or anything. So that's massive. Because if it was just a straight-up Kante, you'd know where you need to go. In terms of, well, you're probably going to need 2 8, and Pochettino is going to be the six, probably take over Fabinho. But because he's more than that, because he can do everything, you're fine to do whatever you want to do, and it doesn't impact your plans on what type of midfielder you want. Just on him as well, I just want to pick up something that Dan said. For me, it's his positioning. I ain't seen a young kid with positioning. Like, he just gets in the way of the ball somehow all the time, and he seems to always be there to buddy up with somebody. Like, you look at that one where it was our second goal, isn't it? It's him and Robertson, and it's his positioning that allows Robertson to walk away with the ball and spring that attack. You know, him always being in the right space at the right time is just like, I've not seen a young kid been able to do that ever.
He decides they're not getting away with the ball, and he literally almost ends up lying down.
He does that where he puts the knee on the floor, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. Does that quite often. Like, I've noticed that a few times. But yeah, his passion's amazing. He doesn't mind running with the ball. His tackling, his
positioning. He loves that flick in the aerial back heel. He's a big fan of doing it.
He was showing a bit last night, wasn't he? He was showing a little bit of flair as well last night, which was new. Maybe that's more advanced role he was playing, but he was definitely showing he had a little bit more to him.
There was one where Salah was on the right-hand side and he was just about in the half space, and it was such a difficult pass to just dink it over the man in front of him. And I was like, oh my God, it's not like the most unbelievable pass you've ever seen, but he had absolutely no time and no space and got it to Salah in space. And I was like, that's fucking genius, that.
Yeah, he's got something. He genuinely has. And obviously he needs to continue to develop that, but
what a base to start with.
Absolutely. You can tell a good player when they get better every single time they play. And if they have a bad game or a bad moment, they don't disappear. Some young footballers will vanish without a trace off the back of that. Like, you'd have been after that the City League Cup game, he was fine. And I said it's interesting because that could have been his Trent at Old Trafford football match, where he goes away for a bit and then he comes back. And as it turns out, he's come back even more quickly, and he's gotten to that level pretty much straight away. I really like him. We've got a real player there.
Also, you're not supposed to do that in a Merseyside derby at 18. No. Like, how many times, like, best player we've had in our generation of Liverpool, as Liverpool fans, Steven Gerrard, he's lost his head in Merseyside derbies. Mm-hmm. Like, you know what I mean? Loads of players down the years have been absolutely lose their head in Merseyside derbies. He's an 18-year-old who was going up against their strength in the middle of the park and came out with me thinking he made their strength look like a weakness and the midfield was our strength.
Flair players being asked to be physical is what is that thing. Is that Everton have had tons of these. Is why Rodwell always struggled in derbies, why Barkley struggled in derbies, Davies has struggled in derbies, because you're being asked to be more aggressive than your natural game is. Whereas he's got that aggression, but he never seems angry. He just seems like,
just in check, isn't
he? You're not getting past me. You're not getting past me because you don't get past me. Not like, I'm not getting past me because we must fight. You know, those kind of things. Because they can be. Gerrard was that. Gerrard was wild when he was young, in the best way. It was so exciting watching him burst onto the scene, because he was just like a bull in a china shop at times. Like, you mean, tearing around after everything, just bubbling over, need to go and get the ball and win it and prove himself. But Jesse, he just looks like, we're having a conversation in the office where who does he most remind you of? And I see Gerrard in there.
I
see Alonso in there. Mm. I see Thiago in there. And this is one of the things about Thiago. This is why you buy Thiago. Yes, because he's a brilliant footballer and he adds loads to your squad and your side. But you want all the young players around to just for him to rub off on. Mm-hmm. And already you can see it in Pochettino. He's just he looks like his protege, doesn't he? He just looks like he's like a sponge, and he's soaked up all these Thiagoisms. He's got the socks, you know. He's doing like
the socks is important, drops. By the way. Yeah. It makes him more of a player the way he wears his socks. I'm convinced of that.
I love the interview as well. And it's funny because he is so young that he's with Mo Salah. If anyone's seen on Sky, and he goes like, Mo Salah goes, he's been our best player, and he goes, the guy goes, what's that make you feel like? He's like, oh my god, he's Mo Salah.
Yeah.
Like,
smile,
you forget, you went, you know, I'm getting praised by one of Liverpool's all time great. Like, he's been here. And you think about it, when Mo Salah joined Liverpool, Stefan Bocchetta was like 12, 13, or something. Now he's getting praised by him. That he is so young. He's 18 years old. Like, I tell you now, if this lad was English, the media would be having a field day with how good he is, because he's everything that you want in the centre mid. Yeah. Again, we've got you do have to be careful with it, and who knows, false dawns, yada yada yada. But in terms of what we've seen so far, mate, I'm very excited. It looks like Liverpool have found themselves another gem. Like we've been saying for a while, haven't we? The academy really needs to get, if you're going to do these signings and bring them through, Harvey Elliott's one where you go, yeah, sign someone in town. But he's, I don't think anyone's quite there with Harvey yet in terms of, we know he's really, really good. He hasn't nailed down a position in the team or whatever. Yeah, it's like Stefan Bajetic has. There's three midfield shirts up for grabs every single week now, but actually there's only two, because it's Stefan Bajetic and two other people, which is crazy to say at the moment, considering like who we've got and where he's at in his
career. He's probably the number 1-6, and he might be the number 3 or the number 2-8 after that performance.
Yeah. I think the interesting thing for me is, I think what it should us moving on from this is, like, I think it should us that we've become a bit reactionary in what we've been watching in terms of like how Jürgen Klopp's been putting teams out and what have you. Now that we're getting a few more lads back from injury, it's going to be really interesting to see how we kick things on from this. But what it showed me was that Jürgen was at great lengths to stress this, and he used Henderson as the main example because it was who he was asked most about in the pre-match press conferences. Is we've got really good footballers, and we've all kind of forgotten that because everyone's been in a bit of a hole, you know, and various people have kind of dragged themselves up at different stages and what have you. But
I think reactionary is a bit harsh in that we've had 6 months of this.
No, that's not what I'm saying. Reactionary to what I mean is people saw Bocetic, Thiago and Keita in midfield and went,
that's it.
Well, he's got rid of Fabinho and he's got rid of Henderson. He's clearly decided to give them some time off and try and do something to repair them as best as possible. And the beauty of it is Bocetic has been a wonderful, happy accident almost in this, where we've discovered a guy who is, I agree, now pushed himself into the pecking order, where he might not be the number 1-6. It's probably still going to be Fabinho, because if he can put in a level, he will play him there, I'm sure of it. But he doesn't have to be impeccable every game. He doesn't need to play twice a week. We've now got a lad who can come in and take the weight off. And similarly, like, Keita's just come off the bench. He's just gone from having to play, this guy who's constantly injury prone, is now back into a world where we've somehow managed to manage the squad in the last 2 or 3 weeks horrendously in terms of results. But if it's left us in a position where we're able to drag ourselves out the mire in the next couple of weeks, then Bocetic has been the shining light of the whole thing, which I think is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I don't know whether I fully agree with that, mate, to be honest, because Thiago's injury has a big impact on it all, doesn't it? You know, the happy accident's probably that game, and that's a reaction of playing Thiago too much. I wouldn't say it has been well managed to get to this point. In fact, because of the injuries, he's been forced into playing Thiago, and Thiago's now got injured because of them.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, I agree with the sentiment, if not how you've got there.
Yeah, I mean, what I mean by this is we got a great performance out of Jordan Henderson last night, and he had nothing left in him. You know, he's done going publicly on record saying, I'm really struggling since the World Cup. And we all know Fabinho's been crap this season. I think a lot of us, if you'd asked us a week ago, regardless, before Thiago's injury, if you'd said, well, them to come in for the derby, I don't think any of us would have been particularly keen on the idea of it. But, and we'll see what happens in the weeks that follow. Hopefully we're now in a position where Bocetic can just rotate with them. I'd be happy to see him play in any of the midfield positions, to be perfectly honest. Keep playing him, keep his game time. That gives us that extra option. But hopefully what we've done with regards to Fabinho and Henderson, if we've made useful footballers back out of them again, then that's
a bit of confidence as well. Yeah. Because, and I think Joe Goldwich, you can put into this into this category as well, of hopefully that is just a little bit of a confidence boost, because he did well his job. I mean, I thought he had a really good game, Joe Gomez, but what I would say is, like, he's playing against the lad up front on his own who's just come back from Sunderland. Mm-hmm. If he hadn't had a good game, you'd have been really, really asking questions because, you know, that's the game he should dominate, but he did. You can only do what you're asked to do, and he didn't give the lad a sniff, did he? Every time he got the ball, he was up his arse and he was kicking.
Well, they chose him clearly because they just wanted physicality. To target.
Physicality, yeah, he's run about a bit
and,
as well.
And he run about a bit, get involved, he didn't do anything. The only chance he got really was when Joel Matip decided to miss the ball at one time, and even he recovered from that. So there's I was saying, like, that it not only that win just stopped the rot and it does make things better, and it's Everton, which is always a bonus. It always makes you smile a little bit more. Hopefully there's a couple of lads who've got a bit more. So Mo Salah gets his goal that he's been desperate for. Cody Gakpo gets his goal, which he desperately needed. Darwin Nunes gets an assist. Joe Gomez has a good game. Henderson, Fabinho, these are all lads who've been really, really struggling. And they can all come out now and look in the mirror and go, right, that was more like it. That is something to build on going into a couple of big weeks, because you were thinking, not only are we playing badly, but the lads looked like the weight of the world was on their shoulders. A derby win where you know you can come off the pitch and you know you perform well, that really should give them, because we have been a team low on confidence, and you've been able to see that in all the performances.
That was that game with potentially Dan, that moment where the plane just hits the mountain. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
you
know, you're like, you grab it onto the yoke and pull them back for dear life. If you lose the Merseyside derby at Anfield, then I don't even know. I can't even imagine what that world looks like.
Yeah.
Whereas, as it turns out, we've managed to escape, not just escape, we've come out with everyone with the heads up. The crowd was absolutely amazing. The atmosphere was as good an atmosphere as we've had in derbies. Mm-hmm. We've gotten players who were out of form back into form, and at the same time, like three or four lads have just walked out of the treatment room and straight back onto the subs bench. So you turn around and you're bringing these lads back on. It's like it was the last possible moment to kind of fix it. We'll talk Newcastle a bit later on in the show, but in terms of like. That we talk about that point of no return a lot. It might well be too late for top four, but at least
might not.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a 6 points at the weekend.
Yeah. It gives us a chance to attack what's remaining for the season, regardless, doesn't it? Because you're right. I think a defeat last night would have been so damaging for our morale, but also the squad's morale. To Steve's point about confidence, because they were low on confidence. But what we did really well in the build-ups this week, and I mentioned this to you this morning, was we changed the messaging around a lot of what was coming out. I think Alisson spoke earlier in the week of his Jurgen Klopp in his press conference. He was a bit more sort of forthcoming about the confidence and what we've instilled in the camp. And Salah spoke after the game about a good week in training. We haven't heard a lot of that positive message and that reinforcement coming out, and it was all there, it was all on display last night, and it showed on the game as well. And it was the perfect night, because you mentioned Gakpo getting his goal, Salah confidence booster, players coming back from injury as well. I think moreover, for me, with the Fabinho and the Henderson point, yes, they needed a good performance for their own confidence and their own belief that they can still do it at this level. But I just think it's more of a physical thing with them. I think allowing them to get some fuel back in the tank was more important than anything else, because so much of their game, in particular Henderson, relies on him being able to do that extra hard yard. He did it with Jordan Pickford early on last night, and it almost instilled belief into himself that he could do it. Yeah. And I think that is more important than anything moving forward. We can't keep saying to Henderson, go, because he can't do it anymore. I don't think he can do it anymore. So we still have to be careful with him. But what that meant last night was, like I said, we can move forward from this point, and that could be a benchmark to go from.
Yeah, and tell him as well, we bring Milner on for that, for Henderson as well, don't we?
You know,
and just making sure you've got another leader on the pitch, someone who's going to go, no, this is the standard for entry. And people will see that. It go back to the wider thing about transfers and players that you need to be bringing in, etc. Mm-hmm. But so now, these are the players they've got. The players we've got need to step up to the plate.
Andy Robbo did it as well. The leadership thing.
Exactly.
He was unbelievable. And laughing in Jordan Pickford's face.
It's just sensational. That's exactly how you deal with that clown. Just laughing in his face. You know.
Man, I remember Sam Allardyce when that Swansea lad dived, and he just had to laugh at him. That's what it reminded me of. It caused a bit of a riot. And I loved, you know, on the riot thing, I loved the fact that like all the lads were over there. Like the subs, Kostas is in there and Van Dijk's in there. And it was weird because it seemed to come from nothing really. It was Conor Cody gets involved. Trying to make up for the fact that he just dummied one for our goal, the big turbo wall, and then but I love it. I've had that, like, all the bench are down there, Darwin's down there giving it the 2-0, because again, when you're losing and everyone's like, you're looking at everyone going, you know what, I might need to look after myself here, blah blah. But no, we were all in this together, kind of thing. You know, I really enjoyed that moment where again it was the bench, and it, like that, you see the coaches are down there, the assistants, and Anna's losing his shit, and everyone's laughing at him. I thought that was a really telling moment in the game, really, because but no one did anything stupid to get yourself sent off. you just made Everton make a show of themselves and laughed at them, but stuff for your mates as well. Yeah. Van Dijk just throwing lads around and stuff. It was excellent.
They've ended up being that galvanising force, because that's the thing about the sense of pride. You know, like, you can't go and lose to Everton. You know, it's embarrassing losing to Leeds, and it's been embarrassing losing to God knows how many games we've lost this season. All the games we've lost this season in their own way. But that was it. It's like, well, that what are you good, or are you actually shit? It's like, is everything from outside saying, is that true? Or have you got a bit of professional pride? Mm. Yeah, okay, well, what's the problem? And they talk about being really open and honest with each other after the game. And I'd love to know what those home truths were. Like, what came out? What were they able to say to each other that maybe had been, like, bubbling under the surface, that had gone unsaid, that was maybe eating away a little bit at the camp?
And the 2 days off as well. Good management.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
You should try that.
Yeah. 2 games a week coming up, lads.
Finally, to be honest with you, I'm sick of these international breaks every midweek. It feels like it's horrendous, especially after a loss or something. Like, this is going to be good now because you can dwell on a derby for a few days and stuff. But no, it's been horrendous not having midweek footy.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Just a little matter of Real Madrid next week. Right, I want to move things forward, because weirdly the timing of this does coincide with a lot of the themes we discussed about that, around like kind of being able to kind of put things to bed and what have you. But obviously the report into the Champions League final and the chaos that ensued around that has come out. I've got this from the BBC leaked. Article.
Yeah,
it was leaked, which is, it tells you everything you need to know again about how shit UEFA are. Just to read some of the headlines from the BBC article around it, saying UEFA bears primary responsibility for the chaotic scenes that almost led to disaster for Liverpool's Champions League final between against Real Madrid, says an independent report. Fans were penned in and tear gassed outside Paris' Stade de France as kickoff was delayed by 36 minutes. It is remarkable no one lost their life, said the report. The report says there is no evidence to support reprehensible claims from UEFA and French authorities, who blame ticketless fans for the events. The panel concluded that UEFA, as event owner, bears primary responsibility for failures which almost led to disaster. All stakeholders interviewed by the panel have agreed that this situation was a near miss, a term used when an event almost turns into a mass fatality catastrophe. Again, it's important to reference again these things that Liverpool fans have been exonerated again by all of this. Liverpool have come out and obviously said the steps that have been recommended that need to be put in place. UEFA seem to be dragging their heels on this stuff, and there's been a couple of things where they've tried to play some sneaky games around this of having certain anonymity added into the reports, which initially everything was meant to be made public after this, wasn't it? All the investigation, all the interviews and everything. And UEFA have played some sort of clever sort of shadow games here, which has led to certain segments of it being redacted, and the French Football Federation have had the same. So, and again, it's a lot of big authorities trying to cover their own backs rather than shouldering responsibility. But from our perspective, Chris, the most important thing is, and it bears, screaming from the rooftops, we all knew it at the time, it's not Liverpool fans' fault. If it wasn't for the positive actions of Liverpool fans, there's a very real chance that people actually would have died at that event.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think everybody did know it at the time, but I think it's important that it doesn't take around 27 years to prove that fact this time. I think there was Liverpool fans owe a debt of gratitude to the likes of, Joe Block from Spirit of Shankly, I think, in the aftermath. Dan Austin's done an incredible job. Ted the Red's done an unbelievable job as well. And there's so many more people that have worked tirelessly from Liverpool's side, but also the journalists that were on the ground on the day themselves. And the day surrounding Paris, I think, is it Cava from Sky Sports?
Henry Solicol and Henry Winter as well.
Henry
by the
Winter
way,
was absolutely really brilliant. There was a Daily Mail writer,
Rob Draper,
who did a brilliant. There's so many journalists who wanted to get to the truth of the matter then and there. And it's that urgency from the journalists and from everybody who went to Paris that I think has enabled this to happen so quickly. Because if there was no urgency from the journalists and they weren't talking about it, I think it just gets brushed under the carpet unfortunately.
I also think that the we live in, you can't get away with things when there's video proof.
There wasn't. Thankfully, we've got the mobile phones, because they literally would have got rid of it.
The CCTV would have. We know what we know. This game, we've been down this road before. It's not a coincidence that the report comes out 2 hours before the Merseyside derby as well. By the way, not for one second think I don't think in any way that is a coincidence. They know what they're doing, which is abhorrent in itself, really. But the main things that I took from it, like I say, is that if it wasn't for Liverpool fans, other Liverpool fans would have died. Mm-hmm. And that just goes without saying. But not only the scenes before the game, the scenes after the game as well, where the policing of, again, I know you guys know this more than me, you were caught up in it, which is horrendous, but like, just watching people get robbed. I heard Paddy the Baddy speaking about it recently, and he was like, I couldn't believe what I was seeing. There was just people, the police would just stand and watch, like, all this, we all knew it was going on, but what happens is, and it's because, A, everyone hates us, so automatically no one gives a fuck, so we have to stand up for ourselves because no one else is doing it for us. There's still people that even read comments on some of the things. Mm. It's the same shite that we've been listening for the last 30 years. It's still being peddled again. Oh, it's always Liverpool, blah, 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 blah. Well, this time, actually, the French authorities, UEFA, and the world football in general are lucky it was Liverpool, because Liverpool fans, having been there before, there was a lot of people who knew how to deal with this kind of situation. We knew, people who were there, I apologise, people who were there realised how to not make what happened there mistakes, and also we're not going to let this slide. We know what yous are going to try and do. We've been down, we're going to deal with it, because if say City had got there, or Man United or Chelsea or Spurs or whoever, it could have been a different story.
You know, there's psychologists and doctors saying that it was that understanding of Liverpool's history and the closeness, and people who were actually at Hillsborough, it enabled the rest of the fan base and all the fans that were there to react accordingly. So I think with any other fan base, there would have been deaths. And you know, in some regards, I'm thankful that it was. Well, I am thankful that it was Liverpool that went through it in that regard. But also being put in that position by the people who were supposed to look after you is terrible. One of the things I can't get my head around, right, from all of this, is that they obviously scapegoated Liverpool fans going in. But they scapegoated Liverpool fans going in. Now, was it 2016 that report came back and cleared Liverpool fans of Hillsborough? Mm-hmm. So they'd had 6 years to fucking digest that information that Liverpool fans aren't hooligans. Mm. Even if they were just, like, how have they done that?
It's a shift in blame.
Because look at Liverpool's arrests throughout Europe, where we go, we've been to European finals. What happened to Kiev? Absolutely fucking nothing. Right, what happened at Madrid? Absolutely fucking nothing. What happened in Paris? Nothing that was our fault. Yeah. And yet you went off a fan culture from 30 odd years ago.
I also think it was the Euros where they seen what happened at Wembley. And
that's the problem, is you're tarred with the English brush, aren't you?
And listen, don't get me wrong, there's fans of every team who goes, I've been abroad and seen knobhead Liverpool. Everyone's seen it, but this is different.
The Panorama documentary covered this. This is not a quote because there's exact numbers around this, so I'm paraphrasing slightly, but it was along the lines of 100 names were given as like a list of people that needed closer attention. And that actually wasn't hooligans. That was actually people who had disabilities and, you know, people who needed extra, more than just, they can just go to a city, commute as normal and get it. They need special attention. Mm. That's a variety for a variety of cases. And you're talking about, people are talking about like the 30, 40, 50, 60, 70,000 Liverpool fans who turned up. It is a fractional percentage of people who merited that kind of any extra attention.
It's also worth mentioning.
For a variety of reasons. And it came down to it. It's the relationship the French police have with football, with football fans, but also with locals and how they handle policing in those environments. And Liverpool fans walked into it. We said it's like walking into a conversation or an argument. You're in the middle of it, and we were the ones who got digged. It's like trying to break up a fight in town, and you're the one who ends up on the floor as a result. This is an ongoing thing. It almost had nothing to do with us. But you had a police force who was spoiling for a fight because that's how they're trained to deal with those situations. And the thing that hurt me most about the whole thing, and I think this is one of the hangovers that people haven't truly discussed even now, is that like going to football matches now, I thought we'd reached a point now where I could introduce my kids more and more to footy, and I could introduce, you know, I mentioned before, I took my wife to the FA Cup semi-final. We had a brilliant day. It was such a good time. She came to the final, and she basically never wants to go to France again, let alone, you know, go to football games, you know, in those kind of environments. And that's one of the most damaging aspects. And we're fine. We'll get over it. We'll get on with our lives. But what happened is you had Hillsborough survivors who were at that game. Mm. There's talk of people who've killed themselves after the fact because it brought up the traumas of all this, and that's a fucking football match, and it gets lost that because we don't want to be treated as customers because we think of ourselves as more than that because we're football fans, but we are, and no consumer in any other business would be allowed to be treated that way. And that's the fucking biggest fucking problem we've got with that. It's just football fans are just treated like cattle and animals every single time.
How can you allow a stadium to be not fit for purpose for your showcase event? 5 years in plan, whatever you need to do, you need to make sure it is.
But it wasn't though, was it? That was the problem. Is that their excuse was
it was
thrown at us because Russia
got the It was 3 months.
Moved, wasn't it?
Which is fine. Well, you know, then if you don't take it on. Yeah, don't
they host big events all the time. Sorry, they host big events all
the
time.
Yeah. you get something, a game gets delayed, or you get an FA Cup where you get a replay, it just gets done. Mm. Like, it's maybe a week later. But like we're talking, you can do an FA Cup replay in a week.
I'm saying this was more of a problem than we had 3 months planning. This was a lot deeper than that. This was horrendous mismanagement.
It was bullshit. The 3 months thing was absolute bullshit.
The issue they've got, though, is that there were issues not long after, weren't there? Was there a rugby game?
A rugby game,
And there's talk about this.
Wasn't it a rap concert?
There's like the rugby's coming up, as they're saying,
and there's the Olympics as well.
And the problem you've got, though, is that, and you'll see this, it won't be noticeable until it's too late, because the Champions League final is such a big deal. So there's going to be a greater number of people who just go, fuck it, I'll go and bunk in. I'll have a go, and that's what happened with the Euros final at Wembley. Mm. You know, if England hadn't been there, that wouldn't have been an issue. But there's a lot of people who were just swept up in the whole. This is not defending it in any way, shape, or form. But you've got to be prepared for that. It's these things are different. The bigger, the more there needs to be greater security put in place. Our pre-ticket checks was those thin metal barriers that you see, you know, when they're plugged into the concrete blocks. Mm. And there was a handful of effectively stewards. And, you know, stewards get a lot of stick, but they're minimum wage paid people with no power whatsoever. They're effectively a step above volunteers when it comes to actually, you know, safeguarding people at events. And there was just thousands of people. And again, I nearly got pickpocketed there. You had people jumping the turnstiles, and then all of a sudden the police arrived and they're charging people. It was a fucking shambles. But we went, you know, there was loads of people turned up in Basel.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
And you got nowhere near the ground because it was set up. Because they were aware this is what happens when you stage big events. There are going to be fans coming en masse, but also there's going to be loads of additional interest in it.
Today, that's like 100,000 people there, and you couldn't get near it. And the worrying thing for me, moving things forward, is like, what happens now? Because there's got to be some accountability, whether it be in the French government, the French police, UEFA, like your own independent regulations or whatever it is, has found out you've got the problem. Like, in any other job, something's happened about that. What's going to happen? Not that's my worry now going forward, is that what next? What
have you read Liverpool's statements on this?
Billy Hogan, I watched Billy Hogan's video. He speaks very well about it. And to be fair, I actually think Liverpool have done well. You know, constantly asking questions, and he condemned the report being leaked in the first place. All that kind of stuff. I think Liverpool, and I know people who have been personally contacted by Liverpool to ask for their stories, and I don't know if you guys were with. They're asking people to send stories in and stuff like that. But Liverpool are right. Something's got to come for this. Something's got to come. You can't just go, yeah, soz. Like, no, something's got to come with this. What happens if in 5 years' time we're at another Champions League final? Can you promise us as UEFA that you've done your due diligence? This year, if we get to Istanbul again, can you promise us that the stadium's safe? Can you all these different type of things? Because it's their event that they're ultimately responsible for. It doesn't matter if it's their stadium or not. They are in charge. And the last a Euros final was unsafe, and a Champions League final was now unsafe.
And there's only 3 months to go until the next Champions League final.
So we know they struggle
with that timescale.
They're UEFA's two headline events that they've had to manage in recent years, and they've both been a shambles. And they're lucky no one died at both of them. How can you trust them again? Like, what? Something's got to change. Something's got to give. And if it doesn't, then what's all this for? Then we're just going, it was our fault, so we'll just crack on. Like, in any other walk of life, there'd be resignations, there'd be sackings, there'd be firings, there'd be all kinds. That's what's got to come next for me.
You just don't know who, none of us know how that happens. And again, this goes back to the problem of being football fans, of having to understand.
We shouldn't have to
legislation at the highest levels of football. But the point is that UEFA will have to do something, because we won't let this lie.
No.
You know, there will continue to be pressure on this, because somebody needs to be held responsible, and action actively needs to be taken. And again, Liverpool hopefully will continue to press on with this and seek that those next steps are taken.
They've just tweeted a minute ago, Liverpool has had a notification about 21 recommendations that have come out from this. So they are pushing ahead, which is boss to say. I just want to say as well, before we wrap up on the subject, Leila Wright as well, the BBC Panorama documentary, credit to her, because another one of those people, the brilliant people who really weren't going to let this lie.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, do go and seek out that Panorama if you want to know a little bit more about it. And we had Leila in the studio not long in the week building up to it as well, who absolutely did a stunning job on it. Absolutely stunning. As with all these things, it's not an easy watch. It's meant to be hard. And again, some people want to be educated. There's loads of ways to educate yourself. Do it. There's plenty of people who don't, and that's the problem with all of this. Isn't that right? This is why we're still seeing Hillsborough stuff. We saw it ahead of the derby, where the Merseyside police put the tweet out saying, like, anyone who's using always the victim and murders and all that. And then you had the inevitable response of A, it's not about Hillsborough, and also, what about the Star Bucharest stuff? And I'll be honest, I don't understand that enough to know what that about, but I know that's a big chicken, but that's clearly not nice enough is my general understanding of it. But again, it always becomes the tribalism. What about this? Like, okay, cool. Why don't we focus on this?
Stopping it.
Let's focus on this for now. Let's stop this, and then we'll move on to something else we can stop, or what? Yeah. Just universally accept not being bellends around the safety of other human beings and their lives, and crack on with just the footy,
Isn't it funny how quickly things can be brought to light when the journalists are on your side?
Yes.
Compared Absolutely. To 30 years ago, 100%. When the mainstream media jumped on the bandwagon and there were two sides to take, and they chose to take the authorities and the police and all those. That's how cover-ups happen. Fair play to everyone who was there, who go, no, we're not, like, no. And they were in similar outlets, or right, whatever you want to call, like, mainstream media, or
that
kind of stuff.
What outlet the journalist worked for, the journalist was at the heart of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And they were willing to do it, and they did it. That's how things happen. Cover-ups happen when you've got the media on your side. So credit to all those people who were like, no, you're hard, that is wrong. And there's loads of them, which half helps, There was ex-Liverpool legends being pulled out of crowds because they were getting squat. Like, but that didn't, if no one bothers reporting on it, or nobody, like you mentioned, all the great people, Chris and Dan before as well. If not for them, this would it'd have been us again. It'd have been us against the world again. And we know that battle's hard to win. I think it just goes to show if there's people on the ground who are willing to put their name to something, it does have an impact.
Football's changed since the 80s for the better. And we're here now because of the tragedies that happened in and around football in the 80s. You know, stadiums had to get safer. There was a gentrification of the sport in general, which meant that, less terracing, less fencing, more family friendly. You know, we've been critical of that because there was an idea that you maybe lost a bit of edge or atmosphere to the football or whatever. But this is where we're at. The Champions League is the result, is the knock-on effect of all that. It's an over-glamorisation of the game. All the money got pumped into it. It's all about celebrity and it's all about big-name things. And what did they do? They allowed all those fucking celebrities and stuff to get caught up in it. Well, that's not that, and it's sad, but that's the knock-on effect of it. You can't have both ways. You can't have it be this glamorous thing where, you know, it's a showpiece, the crown jewel of the sporting world, where all the biggest eyes are on it, and then treat people like subhuman scum who go to it because you're all in the same stadium. Try as you might, people are going to get swept up in it. That was why it was ultimately a fucking shambles. But stay tuned to what Liverpool are doing because, again, you're right, they're conducting themselves, and they have conducted themselves brilliantly throughout all this, and there'll be helplines and what have you if anyone wants to talk around the stuff. So check out the Liverpool, official Liverpool website. Right, we're going to take a very short break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to see if there's anything outside of this, I guess, for Agony Rant, and then we're going to be looking ahead to Newcastle United as well.
Hey guys, how would you like to get your hands on this? It is a 13-14 Liverpool home shirt signed by former Reds defender Martin Skirtle. If you want to be in the prize draw to win this very shirt, all you got to do is head on over to redmenplus.com and sign up as a Club Legend subscriber. You'll get access to all that amazing content, both in video and podcast form. But yeah, by signing up as a legend, you get loads of added perks and benefits as well, one of which is entry into the monthly prize draw. And at the end of February, we were doing that draw and giving away this, yeah, Martin Skirtle signed shirt. Make sure you're in the hat, redmenplus.com, and become a Club Legend today.
Yeah, get yourself in the draw for a signed Martin Skirtle 13-14 Liverpool shirt by joining as a Club Legend over on redmenplus.com. That is this month's competition. Agony Rant, anyone got anything Liverpool-related, football-related, you want to get off the chest?
Our medical department. Still, I know we've got players back, right, but what is going on with our medical... Calvin Ramsey signs as a perfectly fit human being. Never been injured in his life, it seems, at Aberdeen. Played really well for them all. I know Scottish Premiership, whatever. But played really well, always fit, always available. Comes to Liverpool, constantly injured. Another long-term injury. Ben Doak last week injured. It's just a conveyor belt of injuries at the minute at Liverpool.
And maybe they're lonely.
I don't know what's going on with them.
Like, I just want people to talk to.
I mean, we know it's been a little
That's the case. Yeah, maybe everyone's just jumping into the fitness room together.
Unless he's like a really boss guy, the doctor, and everyone wants to be in there.
Yeah.
Well, be in his company, yeah, good vibe. Just having a vibe, yeah.
Yeah.
We have got one now, haven't we? Appointed one, yeah, but it's been a bit all over the place, and that's probably part of the problem.
Thiago,
another one,
I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, the fact that Chris mentioned it before, Thiago's literally played like every minute of every game for the last since we've come back from the
like
World Cup.
Driving your car up and down the motorways and then wondering why your tyres are bald.
I saw people going, "Oh, Thiago," and I'm like, "He's played a lot of football."
It was coming
more than he's played.
I know that he's not going to play. I've accepted long because he's not going to play 50 games a season for us. But he had that injury at the start of the season, and he's come back and he's played loads. And now he's. I know it could be a month that he's out for. That's not great, but like. People get injuries, don't they? You know what I mean? And particularly him. But yeah, but the fact is, like, I think there's an idea that he gets in. He's like Naby Keita or something, where he gets injured every two games, whereas he doesn't. He has like 10 or 15, and then he'll go out for a few, and then you'll have another good spell out of him.
Yeah, the difference was with Keita is he could get injured seemingly doing anything. Didn't matter how much or little football he played. Whereas Thiago, it's kind of a gradual process. You can almost see it happening in front of your very eyes, thinking, you've played too many minutes. At some point, we're going to get a little Paul Joyce notification and you're going to be injured. And lo and behold, there it was. So, yeah, it's just like it's a positive sort of reflection on my mood and how good we were last night that my only agony rant is a bit of Luke's-based medical department because Calvin Ramsey's injured. So things are okay.
Yeah. I mean, they discovered a stress fracture in his back after signing him.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what the medical's for, and that's why we should have had a doctor at the time.
Yeah, doesn't help. And he's had about 3 or 4 since then. Now he's out with a long-term injury.
Have you seen the plan for Curtis Jones? It was don't play football. Because he's got this a similar thing in his leg or something. I get it, but I think there must be a better treatment around for a footballer than just you're allowed to play, but just we have to manage your minutes and your training this and your games. Like that's not a solution. That is like, yeah, I've got a leak in my ceiling, so I'm just going to put a bucket on the floor and catch the water. Yeah. No, that's not what your job is. Your job is to make it better, not just catch the water and throw the cup away every 2 hours.
This has got like all the hallmarks of Edge getting retired from the WWE and Curtis Jones coming back in 20 years to headline like the fucking WrestleMania of football or something.
He's going to be amazing when he's 40.
He's but it's mad for him because it's basically shin splints, isn't it, along those lines that he's got. Yeah. It's not far. It's a similar thing, and you there's just nothing you can do. That could be the end of his career. You know, that happened to Rob Jones, didn't it? Like, you know, it's just, if they're not careful with him, that'll be a major thing. I do feel sorry for him. I think there's some things where it's clearly very intense what we do off in the training pitches. You know, Klopp talks about the training intense. They train like they play. I'm like, fuck that, but. You're right. My solution is that I just presume there's just some sort of like hoodoo been put over us because
Kirby's built on like an ancient burial ground.
Grobbelaar's been back at it, like, but there's something. It just seems just constant. Just a constant conveyor belt. It's never like we get some players back the last couple of weeks and you think, oh, boss, yeah, but then that's caveated by, oh, there's a couple more injuries. You think you're getting away with that?
Our injury room is like Royal Rumble, isn't it, Chris? Is that every 60 seconds or someone 2 minutes you get someone in?
Sometimes no one gets thrown out.
But three lads could be getting thrown out the second they slide under that bottom row.
Yeah, can I move another agony rant? I'm not sure about this LeBron James stuff, you know?
No, I mean, yeah.
I don't know. I don't like the vests.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Nobody really. I don't know who looks good.
The
in
vests
aren't. Vests.
It's not the vest that's supposed to look good. It's your arms.
Yeah, that'll do.
Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter
good
what
point,
the vest
then.
Looks
so then don't
like.
Don't wear a vest. Don't wear
it's
a top.
What your arms look
well,
like.
Don't wear a top then.
No, but like,
don't charge people £80 for it. Just wear a top.
If we're going topless in like public situations, isn't ideal.
There are just some people who suit those better because I think it's fine. That the basketball top sound.
But even just the design of it.
I don't mind. I genuinely.
They're all shit.
I think they're all right. You know what I mean? It's like
I don't even like his logo.
His logo's the real crux of the issue.
The LJ Castle thing. Someone could have come from better than that. Yeah, it's not great, is it? An £80.
I know he didn't just want to copy Michael Jordan, but he should have just copied Michael Jordan.
We said this the other week, didn't we? Like Shaq. Shaq's basically got like an outline of him dunking a basketball. Yeah. I mean, I know then you're then the third person to have it or whatever, but
it could have been he likes doing that thing. He likes doing that thing with the chalk, doesn't he, before the game, like throwing the chalk. That could have been his logo, couldn't it? Rather than this like Jesse Lingard rip off thing with the fucking thing. Like, yeah, it's crap that.
Yeah.
That's a good agony rant to have because last week it was 4 hours of us complaining. So it's amazing what a derby does.
Yeah. I think generally I'm doing okay. I said I've become quite laissez-faire about the footy. I try my best to like not have it take me down with it and eventually trusting that Liverpool would get it right because I
think going on the overlap help or hinder this.
I fucking hell. Like I was only the only reason I ended up happy being there is because Steve McInerney has to turn up and talk about Man City. Because I didn't want to go on there and they missed a major opportunity there because they sat me next to Baz and they could have put me in like the relegation section for a laugh. And that would have been, and it genuinely would have tipped me hat to the comedy of all that, but it was a bit like we've gone from chasing quadruples and me go rocking up on there with like we're going to Champions League final t-shirts and being like shit eating grin to being like our best players are only good players, an 18-year-old kid off the academy and all this kind of stuff. But yeah,
Twitter was nice to you as well.
Always, yeah, definitely, yeah, loves me that.
What happened on Twitter?
Just in general.
Oh right,
he went nice at all.
Just in general.
What did he say?
Nothing. That's the point. It's just there's some people who just don't like Paul at the moment.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Which is funny. Sorry. I'm hoping well.
There's a lot of anti-Scouse racists as well. Not everyone, but there's a lot. I discovered on the internet there's a lot of people who don't like Scouse Liverpool fans.
A Liverpool fan DM me called me a bin dipper the other day.
Yeah.
That's probably where I've had that. A Liverpool fan.
Oh, right. Supposedly.
Well, he said yes, yeah. Called me a bin dipper on the Twitter, which was interesting, but yeah.
Something not like that, is there?
I mean, fair enough. Yeah. You be you, mate. You be
well,
you.
We said this is just that's the thing, and it will remain the thing until Liverpool win a few games. I don't want to give it too much more oxygen because Liverpool win some games, everyone will calm down about it. There's a lot of people who are dying on single issues, and that's like a player performance. So there's people dying on the Thiago Hill, and there's people dying on the Harvey Elliott Hill, and the slightly bigger hill with probably a few more people on it, but not loads still. I would die on this hill. The FSG out hill, and there's loads, and there's the Pebblinders hill. And
mate, I was
the Andreas Kornmeier hill.
I was on the top of the Fabinho hill. I had the fucking flag. I was the king of the Fabinho slander for a while. So
don't forget mount injuries.
Oh god,
that's
yeah,
fucking huge.
That's, yeah, it's actually a big chasm.
There's mount Mason mount sign as well. People are mount out. Yeah, the mount's not great idea.
But everything is eased by Liverpool being more like Liverpool, and I think what it showed that, you know, Chloe's been talking about it, the aways, and how the away support, even when we've been crap, has remained really sort of vocal and really supportive, you know, because that's the idea, isn't it? The team lose and you go, oh, you fucking dickheads. All right, anyway.
Yeah.
Here's your clap. Sing a little song at you. Be better again next week, you wankers. And, you know, and that's really as far as it goes when you've got a team that's as good. And I know people have issues with the squad, but again, for context, it's still miles better than some of the absolute shite we've had, and we supported that as well, because that's just what you do with your footy team, and you can't unfortunately get rid of all of them and get a fresh load in. It doesn't work like that. No one does that, even if we had bottomless pit of
Chelsea
money owners.
Try a good shot,
try it desperately. But even still, they're chock full of random lads, aren't they, you know. Right, okay, cool.
I haven't got an Aggie rant this week, you know, and which is really unusual, but like, Liverpool were just so good last night that you just don't feel like the need for one. What I will say, and it's not an agony rant, but it's more like, why don't we do what we did last night with the flags and stuff every fucking game?
Yeah.
Like, sure. That was just brilliant. And it was like, it was everything I needed as a fan. To just be in the ground, just see all of those flags, see everyone with their scarves out and stuff. It was just perfect. And seeing Jürgen Klopp in the press conference talking about how he needed us with them, and then seeing that.
He's
and
in
then,
love with us.
And then just him giving us the fucking stuff at the end, the fish bumps at the end. It was the perfect game in that regard.
Did your mum ever say to you, like, don't wear your coat inside because you won't feel the benefit?
Yeah.
Wonder if, like, if every day was a flag day, would you feel the benefit of flag day?
It's a bit like the coach thing. I disagree on the cop, because it's like 15 minutes before the game kicks off and then it goes away. You know what I mean? I don't think you can have too many flags or scarves or banners before a game. It makes the cop look as vibrant as possible. But the point is, it could be every game, because Spy and Cop are there every game. They've got a big load of flags, but it was good to remind. I suspect it might not be quite as big in the next game, but it'll be bigger than the game
Real Madrid
that went
Madrid,
before.
Yeah.
But the good thing about the derby was, and what reignited it, what you're talking about, is we're very good in the face of adversity. And when people go, you know, it's like, nah. When we as a fan base go, I'm sorry, but no. There's no fucking chance we're having this. And we did this against Barcelona, you know, and the coach greetings for them, Man City coach greetings, where you just go, sorry, what? Who the fuck are you? And what, do you really think you're going to come into us and try and take this off us? No, we're not having you do that. And the timing of the derby in some regards was kind of perfect for it, because I don't think you get that working against Southampton at home. The fact that it was the derby and we
could be the last one.
Could be the last one. right, let's move things forward. Newcastle at the weekend. Dan.
Yeah.
It's all well and good beating Everton and all that. Our former Anfield's actually been okay, you know, this season. Our away form is the absolute worst. Chris mentioned it before. It's a huge game. A win wouldn't put it top four back into our hands, but the way the fixtures have gone over the last couple of weeks and the way they're going over the coming weeks, this next week from here on, week and a bit, is just pivotal for what the rest of our season's going to look like.
Yeah, it's huge for many reasons, really. Obviously, points on the board and sort of clawing back that top four race is obviously massive, but also, to sort of back up what we did last night is also huge, because we've had sort of individual performances as this season's gone on. The City one's obviously the standout. We've gone, oh yeah, that's what Liverpool look like. Let's just do that again. And we haven't been capable of doing so. So to go somewhere like Newcastle, that, in, you know, to credit them, has been a bit of a fortress up there, St James's Park. If we can double down on that performance and that result, then we will. I think the rest of the league then will kind of all start going, oh no, here come Liverpool again. Like, we've seen this before. We've seen this time and time again. That's Leicester side, that's a manager capable of going on these runs. Now, we've all said it this season, oh, we can put a run together, but whether anyone's actually believed it or not, I'm not quite sure, because it hasn't looked to be the case. If we can go up to Newcastle and, like I say, put a performance in, get the right result, then I think we all start believing, actually, who knows what we're capable of between now and the end of the season, because we've got it in us to do it, there's no doubt about it. And on a more sort of basic level with Newcastle, I actually think their season is not stalling, but they haven't been as good the last few weeks.
And obviously, a bit of cup final light.
Bit of cup final light, yeah. They've got that round the corner, which is huge for them. The fan base know it's huge for them. They'd rather the cup than top four. I'm absolutely adamant of it. And also, they've got Bruno missing. A couple of things just aren't quite clicking for them. So if we can go there and, like I say, be ourselves and do what we do best, then, yeah, who knows what we can do.
I mean, we're the only team who's beat them so far. They've had 13 goals in the league all season. It's a tough game. A point's a good result. I know it's difficult because we are playing catch-up. It's not a great result because we are, because again, we're playing catch-up. I don't know, mate. It's a tough game. It really is. And yeah, again, they've lost one game and they don't concede goals. Eddie Howe's done an amazing job. He's had money to spend, don't get me wrong, but he's spent it wisely. Pretty much all of it's gone well. I think you're right about Bruno being is a big miss one. There's a couple of injuries, question marks on him as well. We are probably getting Newcastle at a good time in terms of everything that's going on. Like I say, few injuries, few suspensions. There is a league, the biggest game in the last decade or something.
The modern era, really. A
chance to win a cup final for them. So it might work out well for us. But it is going to be tough.
There are
teams to play against.
There's a lot of 50-50s to be won psychologically for Liverpool in that game when you're a week out from their first final. Yes. God knows how long.
Yeah, no one wants to get injured, do they? That's what it comes down to. But for me, I don't think a point's a good result for us. I really don't. I think you've got to go and win this game now. And listen, I think if we weren't 9 points behind with a game in hand, I could agree with that.
Yeah,
but like, mentally, what it does to you, where Liverpool are breathing down your neck, sort of like what you were talking about a minute ago, it's like, right, I know in the past, 3 points has always been given for a game in hand with this Liverpool side. It doesn't quite work like that at the moment. I think, you know, you're having to work for it, but it is a genuine 6-pointer in the race for fourth place. And if we win it, we are back into it and everyone around us is shit. So there's a genuine possibility of us getting into that.
I just meant more in the context of them as what they've done to everybody else. Look, you know what I mean?
You're talking about the context of, like, from here on out. So if you remember, we in that final running in the COVID season, did we draw against Leeds right at the start of that?
That was after the Super League stuff.
But then we won. Did we win 8 of the last 10 or something? It seemed like crap at the time. But if you then go win every game that follows it, because you've not lost, then it could prove to be a decent point. But right now, I think the point is Liverpool just need to win some football matches.
They're 9 ahead of us, aren't they? And we've got a game in hand. So my thinking was,
that could be 3.
But if you lose, it's 12, and then you're done for. So
you can't lose, but I don't think a draw really helps you in the race for fourth.
Yeah, fair enough.
You've got to give yourself enough games to get over it, because you've got to remember we're not going on a 12-game
Liverpool need to go on it.
So you've got to have more games to do better than them.
You need to go in on a 10-game unbeaten run, I think. And you don't need to win the next 10. It'd be lovely if we did. You need to stay unbeaten, and that's the only circumstance we're not losing to Newcastle. It would be fine, because they will drop more points if just over the next 10. If net you can still come out on top of them over that spell. It's just how you psychologically bounce into Real Madrid and beyond that. What's interesting for them, we reference it, obviously they got us at the weekend, but Man United the following weekend in the League Cup, their Brighton game at home has been postponed because of that. So that's got to be fitted in somewhere. They then travel to Man City after it. So like their next three games are really big. Yeah, really, really big in terms of what their ambitions are. They then got a little bit of fodder in Wolves and Nottingham Forest, actually not pushovers at the
fodder,
moment.
Fucking hell.
Yeah.
Wolves have improving as well.
The ones who beat us. United at home, Brentford, some difficulties. They've got, again, then they've got Aston Villa.
Are they the
away,
ones we're looking Newcastle. At, do you think, in that top four race? Is it Newcastle?
Only in terms, I think Man United at the moment are playing a grinding results out to worry about them.
I just think it's Newcastle. They could well fall out of it. And if they were to do so, and say they finish fifth or sixth, and I don't want to sort of belittle them or be sort of sympathetic towards it, but they finish fifth or sixth and win that Carabao Cup final, that's a boss season.
That's amazing.
And that's, like I say, that's not sort of me being arrogant saying, oh, Liverpool should be in South Ford, Newcastle shouldn't. Far from it.
No, but if they're a small club that don't win trophies and don't get into the Champions League, be happy with what you've got.
I do think that that is the spot that's up for grabs, in inverted commas. If we can go on that, anything like a run, that's the place we can go and get.
Agreed.
Fingers crossed, 100%. Yeah. Because again, there is a bit of a sort of pedigree of being there, doing it. You know,
of course there is, yeah.
Liverpool have been in similar positions before. You know,
They could do a Leicester. They've been in there all season. And Leicester have done it the last few years, haven't they? And all of a sudden they fell off a cliff when the finishing line's in sight and they've gone, oh, that looks tough.
They're
better than them.
They've left 13 goals. They are so hard to play against. They've lost one game. And it was the last kick of a game in the 97th minute.
The thing is about it is they've drawn, 10 or something this season?
They've drawn the last two in the league, haven't they? Maybe three.
It's ridiculous.
Some dodgy draws drawn 11. Well recently.
Drawn 11 games. It's insane. Like how they are. It's one of those things where we talk about like, you know, false positions in the league and all that. They're doing really well. They've played 22, won 10, drawn 11. Lost one.
Drawn the last three league games, sorry, by the way. So it's Bournemouth, West Ham and Palace.
They're not great draws then.
Only just beat Fulham with a last minute goal as well.
Two goals in those three games, is it?
Yeah.
I know we can't talk because we've been crap, but they're not great draws. Kevin Keegan will be fuming with all them draws as well. He wouldn't be happy with them.
They're not a flyer like they were when they were on that big win.
That's the thing about draws though, isn't it? Is that you're right.
Keeps everything going. Yeah. It keeps everything ticking over in the right direction.
And the clean sheets help, don't it? Like one goal.
Their big challenge, and it's forever the thing, is to turn draws into wins, but draws equally, as we well know, turn into defeats just as easily in some regard. But you're right, the 13 goals conceded is absolutely insane.
Mm.
Absolutely insane. But let's hope we can start to put them to the sword on that one and have a little bit of faith because, yeah, you know, if you can get a win there, and get a good result against Real Madrid that at least keeps it, you know, worst case scenario, keeps it competitive for the Bernabeu, then, you know,
the season's alive.
You've got something to play for. You know, we're not going to win the league, but it gives you something to look forward to every week. That was the most depressing thing about January last season, was when we were like, you know, 9 or whatever points, and you think, well, we've got a lot of football here to play in the league, and it means nothing. We've never had that before, really, where the league is completely and utterly pointless. Be nice to feel like it's a fight, like, you know, we feel like we've got something to actually work towards, and get no open top buses for fourth in the league, but in terms of keeping the project going, and if we can somehow manage to engineer our way through a couple of rounds of the Champions League, you knock Real Madrid out, and if we can get that form back, and if we can keep some of the top lads fit, why not?
I was saying this yesterday before the derby, by the way, upstairs. If we somehow manage to get past Real Madrid, which I know is so easy to say, all of a sudden that entire Champions League draw just not opens up, but you look at it and go, well, half, why not?
Who else?
Like, yeah, who else? Who's next? Because PSG play Bayern Munich tonight, don't they? So one of them's going to go. You've got Napoli and City you'd probably like to avoid. It's a little bit further down. But all of a sudden,
Do you know what? I'd probably want to avoid Napoli more than City.
I agree. Absolutely agree with that, by the way. Yeah, and I just think like this.
The form teams in Europe, aren't really in it. It's only Napoli, really.
Yeah. There's no Barca or anything, Arsenal, yeah.
I know we're talking ahead of ourselves here, but if we did manage to get past them, I just look at it and go, one win against relegation for the Sean Dyche ball.
You win one derby and all
this. I've got a tattoo,
but from in June.
Can you fucking tattoo one game at a time on you then? Because I think we all need a little bit of that at the moment, don't we?
Well, again, we said before, if you can't feel happy.
You've got to enjoy the wins when they happen, because you don't know when your next one's coming.
Gary Neville said yesterday, before, like he said, Liverpool can go on runs. They've done it before. You're right. Everyone in that top four race, even though we're crap, every one of them's got the rear view mirror on, going, got to keep an eye on Liverpool. Mm. We need to, like, there'll be a lot of teams just hoping that Newcastle beat us and then they'll go, right, don't worry about them. Yeah. Now we're focusing on chasing you down. There's a lot, you've got to stamp on our heads because everyone does worry about it. Now, that is history. That isn't the current Liverpool side, but with Jota on the bench, Firmino on the bench, Van Dijk
looks
coming
a
back.
Lot like this Liverpool side on paper looks a lot like the Liverpool side that's done all them things, doesn't it? You know,
I watched with having those three lads on the bench. So if you think about it in the next game, even if those three all played, then that means you've got Matip goes back to the bench or Gomez, whatever, but then it means, like, you know, Nunes could be on the bench or Gakpo could be on the bench. The squad is starting to fill out. Touchwood, like I said, keep fucking all of them fit. But
There's a world, Steve, where we're bringing the best centre-half in the world back into the team. Mm-hmm. You're bringing a 20-goal-a-season forward back into your
Luis Diaz isn't miles away.
Yeah, And you bring in Roberto Firmino as well, who's Roberto Firmino, who's an absolute genius back into your team, and shock horror if Liverpool actually start to play a bit better and score a few more goals.
We're getting top four and winning the Champions League, I'll be honest.
Anyone else excited?
Right, Sad, you should be, because if you're not, then just crown green balls, give it up. Honestly, give it up. Right, yes, thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. That is the Originals podcast. If you want to check us out, we're going to be doing our new Bias Football podcast. Pretty much after this, where we're going to heavily heavily show our bias against all football teams that aren't Liverpool, over on Red Men Plus. Always good fun. We're going to be talking about Pep Guardiola, who has decided to just take a big old gallon of the Man City Kool-Aid and tip it all over his head. He's in. He's all in. He's all in on their weird delusions, conspiracy theories and all that. He has apologised to Stephen Gerrard. Go ahead. We're going to be talking about whether Arteta and Arsenal are bottling it or whether there is just a conspiracy against them with referees. And we're going to be picking our bell end of the week and our grudging respect of the award of the week as well. And we might talk about the Champions League because I'd totally forgotten it came back this week. If you want to join us over there, we've got a code that you guys can use. If you head over to redmenplus.com, click join today, go on your £5 monthly subscription and use the code BIASED, B-I-A-S-E-D, I struggled there, in the code. You can get it for £2 a month, which basically works out 50p an episode of that podcast. So yeah, get involved with that. 50p, so just come and listen to us talk about how much of a lunatic Pep Guardiola is. Seems like pretty reasonable value. Hopefully we'll see it over there. Scan the QR code if you're on YouTube to take you straight to the website. And other than that, that is us for another Red Men Originals podcast. We will return next week. Paul Major, Chris Page, Dan Club, Steve Hoare, all with big smiles on our faces. Long may that continue.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.